Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to, once again, a steamingly hot July summer Tuesday evening. This is Seth and Sean. Man, I was kind of hoping to be doing this show from my deck, a beer in my hand, but no, it's 97 degrees outside. I can't do it. So I'm sitting in my little hovel of an apartment with the air conditioning blowing because there's just no other way to do this right now.
Agreed.
How was your weekend, Mr. Palmer?
It is ridiculously hot. Ridiculously hot. 97 degrees outside. It is a hot, steaming summer, and the New York Knicks are in a whole boatload of crap. As I look down upon Madison Square Garden down the street from my, I don't know what you call it, my block, 8th Avenue, they're in a lot of trouble. I don't know if they're in a lot of trouble. To me, they're in a lot of trouble. To some pundits out there, this is the right move, and we'll soon know in, what, 4 hours and 58 minutes what that move is going to be. For those that don't know, Jeremy, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, it seems to be established that Mr. Lin will not be coming back to Broadway. And we had talked about it a couple weeks ago. I had discussed it earlier, that the poison pill contract of $15 million in the third year with the contracts that they already have in service was because of the luxury cask would be worth about $30 million. But didn't Jimmy Dolan, and yeah, I call him Jimmy, didn't Jimmy Dolan say, hey, I'll pay up to $1 billion? Was there a $965 million discrepancy that I missed?
Well, I think the funny thing is, I was reading a little bit of John Hollinger and Chad Ford on ESPN, and we at Sean, Seth and Sean, don't mind propping up the good writers from wherever they are, whether that be John Hollinger, Chad Ford, Sam Amick from, or Amick from SI and whatnot, and our very exclusive guest that we have once in a while, Jared Swerling, who from ESPN New York, who also has stated today, just recently, that no decision has been made. So all of these reports are just that. They're just reports, and that no decision on the Lin situation has been made. That being said, man, what happened to the Knicks in the last week? I mean, they have totally revamped their lineup. Now, I'm not sure it's for the good.
Well, it depends what kind of lineup we're talking about. If you're talking about a police lineup, obviously, we have a little bit of that as well. Welcome back to New York, Mr. Kidd. A signing I thought was a wee bit dubious to begin with at this point to offer Jason Kidd a three-year contract. Then the trade for Ray Felton, Jason Kidd is not a starting point guard for a championship caliber team at this point. And I guess they made a determination that Lin was not a suitable option.
In the last week, I would like to give Jared Swerling props, who said that Tony Douglas would not be on the team next year. So that's definitely a good prediction on Mr. Swerling's part, and we hope to have him on in a couple of weeks and maybe sort this whole thing out. The fact of the matter is, in the last week, the Knicks have gotten rid of Harrelson, Tony Douglas, a couple of second-round picks in the future, the second-round picks that they got this year, of which I cannot pronounce the guy's name, Dan Grzetnik, who was on on a half-guaranteed a non-guaranteed contract, and in comes Jason Kidd, who, if this was 2007, would be an incredible acquisition. And Marcus Camby, if this was 2007, would be a great guard, a great center. And Raymond Felton. And, whoa, wait a second. This is 2007. We're getting the gang back. So we got Marcus Camby, and now we're getting Kurt Thomas back, too. So basically, this is.
We're back in 1990. Is this the 1999 final starting front court?
I don't think Kurt Thomas was on that team.
Oh, he was later. My fault.
It was later. It's possible, but if you go back to 1999 and you put this team together, aside from Carmelo, who was like four, the rest of the team are fantastic. We have an all-star lineup. It is unbelievable, the turn of events. But I'll tell you one thing. I wouldn't say that right now. I'm not going out on a limb saying that they're not going to re-sign Lynn. I still think that there is a chance that they do.
I think the money itself shouldn't make a difference in this case because he's the exception to the rule in regards of the revenue dollars that come in based on the marketing of Jeremy Lin, the jersey sales of Jeremy Lin, will more than reimburse. I would think would more than reimburse the Knicks in that regard. Raymond Felton is a nice point guard, although he had a terrible year last year in Portland. But he's not going to be no one's going to be buying Raymond Felton jerseys. Speaking of jerseys, did you put out the poll for what team I should root for this year?
No. We're going to do that after the Jeremy Lin saga is over. I think that that's only fair because people may root for the Rockets.
That is true.
So, or they may. You also haven't given me your 8 teams that you won't root for.
I will give you that list tonight.
All right. And then we'll go through it that way. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is, realistically, the Knicks are going to be a much different team next year, in all likelihood. And my problem with Raymond Felton is Raymond Felton is what he is. I mean, he's 28 years old, and you've seen the best of Raymond Felton, which was under Mike D'Antoni, and you've seen the worst of Raymond Felton, which was last year in Portland, and in the Nuggets, it was kind of in the middle. So there's no real upside to Raymond Felton. I mean, he is what he is. Jeremy Lin at least has some upside to him. And the Knicks, of all teams, right now the Knicks, I think we talked about this last week, the Knicks are on a 3-year window. Everybody's on a 3-year contract. Carmelo's done in 3 years. Amari's done in 3 years. Jason Kidd's done in 3 years. Now Marcus Camby's done in 3 years. They let Landry Fields go. Jared Smith has done in 2 years. Tyson Chandler's done in 3 years. In 3 years, they have no salary on the cap. None. No salary to speak of. Why on earth are you not taking this shot, Jimmy Dolan, within 3 years? That's all it is. It's not a 5-year contract. It's a 3-year contract. So take your shot, see what you can do, and if you don't like it, look, Joe Johnson was traded with a contract that I still can't understand how that was dealt. You can certainly trade Jeremy Lin in year 3.
And speaking of the team across the Williamsburg Bridge, re-signing Chris Humphreys to a 2-year, $24 million deal, unless I'm mistaken, their starting five now officially passes the luxury tax.
Well, they got six. Yeah, I think you're right. But then again, when you're owned by the 10th richest man in the world, does it really matter?
Not really. And that's why they were.
The man couldn't find his $100 million yacht.
I have that same problem.
Yes, I know, but yours is $100 million in Monopoly money.
Yes, well, it is what it is. But I do post that on my JDay profile, that I have $100 million yacht. So, you know, sometimes you get away with these things, sometimes you don't. Other happenings in the NBA, Grant Hill going to the Clippers. An interesting call with the Lakers, with considering both the Lakers, were all after him. Clippers, to me, still not really a championship team, especially now with we don't know the extent of the injury to Blake Griffin.
I think the Clippers did two things well in this offseason. They re-signed Chauncey Billups, which I think is an incredible move. Because, and it's ironic considering Chauncey never wanted to be there to begin with when he was amnestied last year. And they got Grant Hill. I mean, if any two people are going to teach this team, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, and Chris Paul, how to win a championship, it's going to be those two guys. I think that's a startling move. I think it's a great one.
How exactly is Grant Hill going to teach you? I'm as big a Grant Hill fan as anyone, but how is Grant Hill going to teach you how to win a championship?
Well, okay. That's a good point. Fair enough. Maybe teach them how to be professionals and not screw up.
That's probably a better way to put it, although I wouldn't really put Chris Paul in that category, but I understand your point.
I think the bigger issue, you just mentioned that Chris Humphreys was signed to a 2-year deal, and I know we glossed over that a bit, But if you look at it, Chris Humphreys on a 2-year deal. Now, Dwight Howard, we know Dwight Howard's back and forth and back and forth. And right now, they're supposedly renewing talks with the Lakers. What they haven't offered, I have no idea yet. I mean, unless you get a third team in there somewhere. Because I don't see buying them for Howard working out. But if you look at that 2-year deal that Humphreys signed, it is a perfect deal to, if Brook Lopez, or Brooke Lopez, becomes the player that the Nets believe he could be, and they want to trade him for Dwight Howard later in, like, by December 15th, which is the first day that you can trade, sign and trade free agents that have just signed, Humphreys fits right in there on a 2-year deal. So
yes, he does.
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if this, if Dwight Howard is on the Magic come day one, which happens to be Rob Hennigan's worst nightmare, we go through this for another whole year, or another half year, and come December 15th, here we go. Hello?
I think Mr. Palmer just hung up a little bit. So either he's mad at me for a change, or he'll be calling back momentarily. And speaking of, there he is. I was wondering where he went.
AT&T doesn't like me today. I think it's because I sold their stock. But they certainly don't like me today. So I'm back. But, I think, like I said before, I think Dwight Howard is back in play on December 15th. I don't think he goes anywhere before the season. I think Rob Hennigan is basically just scratching his head the entire year going, what did I do by taking this
job? Or what did I get myself into? They can't hire a coach
because
nobody wants to go there. Brian Shaw dropped out. Michael Malone dropped out. I'm assuming that the coach at the JCC on 76th in Amsterdam may be getting the call next week. But then again, how much less experience could he have at the professional level than Mike Dunlap does now? So, who knows? We should say, if people want to call in, because we had a lot of responses to a really good Facebook question for our question of the day. Our number is 760-283-0846. We may have a return guest who hasn't been on for a while. I believe will be calling in, and we've had about 10 to 15 responses on my side. How about you, sir?
I got a couple. There weren't 10 to 15, but I got a couple. It wasn't a big deal. Work's been actually busy this week for me, so hasn't been much of a response. But we'll get to what we got at the bottom of the hour. Who's joining us today?
I am not going to tell you. I'm going to leave it as a surprise. The question of the day is, what'd you say?
A guest appearance. A guest appearance to the host. Okay, then. Go on.
The question of the day is, what is the individual game or event that you recall the most vividly? And what do you remember about it? Where you were, who you were with, yada, yada, yada. Wow, if that's not the New Yorker in me going yada, 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 I don't know what is. So we'll hit that at 7:30. We got about 15 minutes prior to that. I think we probably should talk about the free report, as little as I think anybody wants to. I don't really particularly want to dwell on it. One of our listeners actually sent me a question, Alyssa from Philadelphia, who is a Penn State diehard, asking whether she thought that this was worthy of the death penalty, because the NCAA chair, Mark Emmett, has actually been making some comments along those lines. I was kind of curious to hear your thought on it.
Well, I've read the free report, believe it or not, cover to cover.
I thought you were working hard this week.
No, this was on the train home. And
okay.
Because you can only read it in chunks, because it's that disturbing as to this whole. And for those that don't know, and I'm shocked if you don't know this by now, the free report documents what has happened in the last, 1998, so say the last 15 years of Penn State and the cover-up, or supposed cover-up, that's happened in Penn State in regards to Jerry Sandusky. And it goes up and down the chain. From Graham Speyer, who was the president, to Joe Paterno, to Jerry Sandusky, to Mike McQuarrie, it's everybody and anybody. and it is a tremendous report. They did a tremendous job. Do I think that they were on a witch hunt? Perhaps. Do I think that they only saw one side of this? Perhaps. Because when you're given a job, you do the job. I'm not sure that they were looking for both sides. Do I think the Paternos or the family has said that they will come out with a rebuttal? A rebuttal can take years. But the damage is done. I think anything that comes back from the Paternos is just going to look like sour grapes at this point.
Well, and one thing that should be...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, the one thing that should be stated is... The one thing not in question is the credibility of Louis Free.
Absolutely not.
He's a former director of the FBI. He's a federal judge. He was an assistant U.S. attorney. And, you know, he was given complete autonomy.
Yeah.
And to be honest, this is about as impartial an individual, I believe, that you could have really brought in to run this. So I'll leave the rest of this to our attorney on the other side of the show,
well,
please.
This was not George Mitchell. This was not the Mitchell Report. This was not based on two interviews or two guys that spilled the beans on 30 people or 40 people to besmirch names. The people that were interviewed, I believe they said that there were over 3,000 people interviewed in this report. It is exhausting. I mean, if you really want to, I hope you don't read it, really, because it is sickening and it is so exhaustive in minutia that you'll probably put it down after about 20 pages. And I'm lucky, like I said, I read it in 20-minute chunks, and I finally got through it. It's about 300 pages. So the fact of the matter is, death penalty, let's remember what the death penalty's for. The death penalty was given to SMU in the mid-1980s, correct?
Yes.
Correct. Mid-1980s for SMU?
Yeah, 1986, 87, after the Dickerson and Greg James Pony Express teams of the mid-80s.
Yes. Right, okay. And what the death penalty states is that the sport will not exist for 1 year. You will not play at all. And the reasoning for the death penalty is institutional oversight is gone. There's no institutional oversight whatsoever. After reading that report, I can't argue with people that are saying that this is a death penalty case. There was no institutional oversight of any sort if that report is accurate.
I do wonder, and this is the question that I have, is because, and certainly not trying to minimize the, you know, what happened, but because it's really, for all intents and purposes, not particularly sports related, I wonder how much does the NCAA have jurisdiction to do this kind of thing?
Well, the NCAA has jurisdiction over any sport, so they have jurisdiction. The question that I think the follow-up question that you're looking to ask is it right for them to do it? Not
that's probably
do they
a better
have
way
jurisdiction to do it. The NCAA has jurisdiction to shut down all sports tomorrow if they wanted to. You get a due process claim because nobody. I mean, there'd be a lot of claims saying why or how can you do this, but they do. Their charter allows them to shut down it the same way it allows them to ban Jeremy Bloom, who was the skier who took the skier and football player. They took the endorsement.
Right.
They can do whatever they want. And they have no congressional, no oversight from the federal government. I mean, that's why the BCS has been the BCS as long as it has. Nobody on Capitol Hill wanted a BCS. But you do what you want to do. I don't know if I think, I'm sorry, it's not that I don't know. I think you have a very valid point. Is this a student-athlete lack of oversight? Or is it just maybe 10 individuals who were coaches that it was an oversight for? And
can I have that I had a legitimate point in writing?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'll actually post it on the Facebook page. But the fact is, I think you're right in that question has to be asked. Because book, my question, my follow-up to that is, okay, so you don't give him the death penalty. You don't. If you don't give him the death penalty, you can't give him any sanctions, as far as I'm concerned. Because if you're saying that you're going to punish, it's not Penn State's fault, but rather it's an individual's fault, such as Paterno. Are you going to strip Paterno's wins? I think that's the only thing you can do, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, this is so far beyond sports. I remember when we discussed this first in November, I was pretty shaken, actually, when we did the show, and I had to talk about this. And I don't know what the right answer is. You know, I'm not going to give some, you know, I obviously offer my opinions, and I offer them pretty loudly and pretty bluntly. But this is not something, I am not comfortable giving a death penalty, I don't believe, in this case. As incredibly warranted as some kind, I don't know what the correct penalty is. I saw a suggestion in Sports Illustrated, the lifting of student financial aid. But my God, that would destroy the university. And Penn State is the best state school in Pennsylvania, so I'm not quite sure who exactly that's harming the most, except for people who can only afford in-state tuition. I don't know. And
right,
I think
the question has always been, and this is what we debate back and forth when sanctions are given out, is who are you trying to harm? Who's the problem? What's the solution? By giving this punishment, and I know people say this all the time, that when you give a bowl ban, who are you punishing? Because the coach who commits the errors, say a Kelvin Sampson from Indiana, or Tommy Bowden, guys that were under scrutiny to begin with, but, or best of all, Lane Kiffin, right? I mean, or Pete Carroll. The guys that are under the watch when this happens, and then they are free to leave, but the penalty is on the school. Is it really the school, or is it the person that did it? And if you're saying take away all financial aid, why? These guys didn't do it. These kids didn't do anything. Yeah. I think that would be the most inappropriate thing to do.
I agree. It was something that came up, and in the Sports Illustrated article, I thought it was a bit over the top. But it just shows you the extent of where people are going with this. Because to be honest, no one really knows. This is so far beyond anything that we've seen in sports. That, you know, where do you even start with this? But before, let's get along to other things, because we only have, as I said, I think we're going to have a long discussion when it comes to the question of the day.
Okay.
So we got about 5 minutes prior to that. Is Dez Bryant starting to feel like a less talented Randy Moss to you? A guy, people start to trade up to get him. He's got enormous talent. And everything just seems, you know, he's been arrested for disorderly, I believe, for slapping his mother. Now, I haven't really read the details of this. But at some point, you got to start to wonder whether the talent is worth this.
Well,
is his talent worth this?
I don't really know. I mean, is his talent worth this? I mean, was Lawrence Taylor's talent worth what he did?
Yes,
was
Lawrence
Ray
Taylor
Lewis
was the greatest defensive player of all time.
Was Ray Lewis's talent worth what he did?
Depends on what you figure that he did.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. So, look, somebody's going to give Dez Bryant another shot if he gets released by the Cowboys. I figure he's going to get suspended from the league for at least 6 games because of this. So, I mean, the question is, somebody's always going to give these guys a shot because talent overweighs anything. Randy Moss is back in the league. I mean, whoever thought, the only person, and it's funny, the only person that I've ever seen so blackballed because of stuff that he did was Terrell Owens. And the difference is Terrell Owens never did anything off the field.
No.
I think
Terrell
he
Owens
gets
was
the
a
bum
pain.
I think he gets a bum rap.
He does. I actually agree, and I'm as far from Terrell Owens fan as you're gonna as you can find. But the man played every game. He played for the most part very hard. He was a good blocker. He didn't have the best hands in the world, but he was a really, really solid. But now his life is just disintegrated into some, I don't even know what to call it. He was just somebody who was not prepared for the stardom that came with being a superstar. Marshawn Lynch arrested again.
Right.
DUI.
That to me, and we can bring up Jason Kidd's DUI here too, because Jason Kidd, who was reportedly out in the Hamptons with his wife, I saw this in the Post the day before, spotted next day, page 6 DUI.
Is he still with
his
wife?
What is wrong with you people?
I'm more surprised.
Well,
didn't his wife have him arrested?
Yes. They rekindled, I think. Multi-million-dollar contracts. I don't know. I mean, I was talking with a couple of people at the gym today when we saw Marshawn Lynch's report that he was pulled over. And my buddy who I work out with looked at me and says, so you stress out between the $15 and $20 cab fare, right? I was like, yeah. I was like, I keep watching the little ticker that goes, the meter that goes up and up and up till it gets like 20, and then I'm freaking out because it's a huge cab ride. He's like, these guys can afford limos every day. What possesses them to drive? And I didn't have an answer for him, because that is the most asinine thing I could ever think of for a professional athlete. You can call a cab anytime you want.
Yes, you can. Jason, by the way, Jason Kidd, this is his wife number two. This is the same
wife number two.
As, so, all right,
okay.
Let's kind of go on, because we've had a pretty depressing first 25 minutes, to be honest. Let's go on, though. I think what was one of the better questions we've ever done is a question of the day. Is what is the individual game or event that you recall the most vividly, and what do you remember? And if people want to call and comment on these, the number 760-283-0846. And we'll start off with, let's see here. We're going to start off with Mike from Pennsylvania. Andy Chavez's catch versus St. Louis in Game 6 of the 2006 NLCS. I was at an ESPN zone in Baltimore with a random Mets fan from Manhattan. I was screaming out of the bar, attached back to the hotel before.
Seth, you are breaking up.
Uh-oh. Am
Seth,
I?
You are breaking up still.
Okay, let me try going outside.
Now you're good. Now you're good.
Okay.
There we are.
So, do you need me to repeat that, or did you hear it?
Well, I heard that he was at a ESPN zone.
Did you hear what the play was?
Yeah, it was the Andy Chavez catch.
Okay. So, for
me, I remember
me,
where I was for that one, too.
I remember I had just finished playing a soccer game, and I was at the Bull's Head Tavern on 23rd and 3rd in Gramercy Park in New York City. Because it was the only bar I could walk into smelling that badly. And I watched, and no one else had the game on. No one else was paying attention to the game, so I sat at the bar and watched the game by myself.
It's a sad existence.
No, it's not the first time.
I was actually lying on my bed talking to a female suitor for the very first time, and I told her that if a big play comes on, I'm watching the Met game, and if a big play comes on, you'll have to excuse me as I might curse or scream. And the Andy Chavez catch happened, and I cursed and screamed into the phone. I got about 35 text messages and had to call back my brother, and it told this lovely lady, of which I don't remember her name, that I would have to call her back soon, and I did. 25 minutes later, after I was all done with every text message that I got. So I know exactly where I was.
You never saw her, did you?
I'm sorry?
You never saw her again, did you?
Oh, absolutely I did. We actually became, we went out a couple of times, but I do not remember her name.
Obviously, once again, another woman leaving such a memorable impression on the mind
or
of Mr. Palmer.
Or obviously me leaving one, one or the other.
Okay, next is Kevin from New Jersey. Rutgers football against Louisville, November of 2005. I believe it was the first time they beat a top 10 team in school history. When Ito kicked the go-ahead field goal with 8 seconds left, it was the loudest roar I've ever heard from a crowd, and then everyone stormed the field. I actually, do you
I
remember where you were for this?
I can safely say I have no idea where I was during that game.
I actually remember exactly where I was for this game. I was visiting D.C., staying at my best friend from grad school, Dave Swift's place. Dave played college football and has actually called the show once or twice before. And we were watching this and we were laughing about how this team could actually be undefeated. Rutgers, they were down like 26-3 or something and came back and won in the last minute. Just turned to each other and just said, Jesus, this is what an amazing, just an amazing run. And they lost next week, but that was a great year with Greg Schiano. And they would go 10-2, I believe. So let's see what else we got here. I'm going to leave him because I believe he will be calling in. That would be our special caller. So, Allison Staley, the formerly, once our site goes back up again, which we are waiting with anxiously, wouldn't even begin to start it, there was only one answer it could be for her, to be honest. And I'm going there. Hold on. Let's see what we got here. There we go.
Can I guess? Wait, can I guess?
You can.
I'm guessing Brandi Chastain's goal.
Right sport, wrong moment.
Then I don't know.
The Landon Donovan goal versus Algeria.
Okay.
She was She works for Amex for all of her stalkers. She was in a Amex conference room packed with about 30 other professionals going crazy, and no work was done the rest of the day. Did you get to see that? Did you get to see the Donovan goal live?
I thought I saw it with you.
No, you came. I don't think you saw it with me.
No? Okay, then you get in. But I have no idea where I was.
You saw the Ghana game with me.
Okay, I have no idea where I was.
I was at Ship of Fools, which it was my favorite sports bar on the Upper East until their brilliant management company decided to raise the rent 25%, watching with about 80 other people. Everyone literally sick to their stomach and crying like five-year-olds when Donovan scored the winning goal. You could hear the screaming around the entire Upper East. It was a pretty cool moment. And I wanted to thank Allie for a good memory. That was mentioned a couple times, so I'm going to skip those. Jesse from New York. When I was 10 years old, watching the ball roll through Buckner's legs in my bedroom alone, going bat beep, going crazy.
I know where I was for that.
Where were you for that?
I was in my basement on my dad's leather recliner. We had a concrete basement. It was not finished, and the leather recliner was just in the middle of the room. And we had a 13-inch color TV with rabbit ears. That basically got four channels, including WWOR, which was the Mets channel. And everybody in my entire house was sleeping when that happened, and I woke up everybody. But I do not know where I was for Game 7.
Oh. For Game 6, I'll be honest, I was asleep. I was 10 years old. I wasn't really allowed to stay up that late to watch the game, especially because I wasn't a Mets fan.
Oh, come on!
No. I had no idea what happened.
Wow. Okay.
Jeff from New York. Although he didn't give the example. The Lawrence Taylor breaking Joe Theismann's leg.
I have no idea
where
he
was.
I
have no
idea
where I was either. My guess is I was
because
asleep.
Because we were too young.
Seven.
We were probably asleep.
Yeah, I was like 9 or 10, and that was a Monday night game, so I'm assuming I was asleep for that.
Yeah.
Dave, formerly from New Jersey, watching Ewing miss the layup and Charles Smith getting blocked 3 times under the basket.
Do you realize that we only remember the bad things?
Well, do you remember where you were for those games?
Yeah, every single one of the Knicks games. I remember the finger roll games. I remember the Reggie Miller game. I remember the Charles Smith game. I remember when Starks went 3-for-21. I know where I was. I don't have a clue where I was for any of the winning games, just the losing games.
And it's funny, there's only one Knicks game that I distinctly remember where I was. Well, two. One of them I'll go when I start going through some of mine. I remember watching the game live. I believe I was at my fraternity house.
We didn't even get this. Where was Jeff?
This isn't Jeff. Jeff was the Joe Theismann.
Oh.
He didn't give an answer.
Okay.
Dave, this is Dave from New York. He didn't give an answer either. So his was
okay.
Watching Ewing miss the layup, which I vaguely remember watching and laughing my ass off.
Thank you very much.
And you're welcome. And Charles Smith getting blocked three times under the basket. Once again, laughing my ass off.
Uh-huh.
But to be fair, the only distinct memory I have of something specifically for the Knicks was Allen Houston hitting the game-winning shot to beat Miami in the 1-8 series in 1999, and I was actually in a car dropping a girl off. And I had to miss the last.
Do you remember where you were when Larry Johnson hit his 4-point play?
Yeah, I remember watching the game. I don't remember where I watched it.
Oh, okay. I actually remember running down the entire street. Now, do you remember that girl's name?
It wasn't my girlfriend, actually. Actually, no, maybe it was the girl I was dating. I don't. I think I was with my friend Scott Warren.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is why Seth and I are both single.
I think I was with my friend Scott, and it was his girlfriend Jill, if I remember correctly.
Okay. By the way, if you'd like to check out the Seth and John Sports Radio page on Facebook, we do have one, and it now does say, note, at 7:24, Seth had a valid point. So, I know. If you'd like to call in, 760-283-0846 with your event or events that you recall exactly where you were, what you were doing, and how you were doing it. Well, maybe how you were doing it is a little bit, we really don't need to hear that. If you were doing something that requires the how you were doing it, we definitely want to hear that you remember the sports moment.
All right, this is one of the better ones. Seth from San Diego. Well, you didn't say, actually, where were you for the other games?
For what other games?
For the New York Knicks games.
Oh,
you don't remember.
Games, I was at my friend Apoorva Shah for the 3-for-21. My grandparents crying on the floor for the finger roll. And at my aunt's for Charles Smith's debacle. And in my fraternity house for the 4-point play, of which I went screaming down the block.
Okay. Game 4. That's from San Diego. Game 4 of the World Series, October 23rd, 1996. Yankees versus Braves. The Leyritz three-run homer on top of the eighth against Mark Wohlers. I had just gotten out of a late class and was eating in a lower dining hall at the University of Arizona Student Union. The ball left his bat, and I shot up, and my chair went flying backwards, and everyone in the place looked at me. I didn't care. I loved it. That's a good – I like that. I was at my fraternity house watching the game. Because I was in a fraternity of all Maryland people, and they all were all Orioles fans, so they were all bitter human beings. And 20 years later, 15 years later, still are.
I was at 910 Ackerman Avenue.
If you know where you are for this one, I will call you the greatest sports mind in the history of existence. Stuart from New Jersey, formerly from the United Kingdom. 1989.
Okay.
Arsenal at Liverpool, needing to win 2-0 to win the league.
Wait, what time was that?
Because
if it was after my bedtime, I was probably asleep.
Mickey Thomas gets the second goal in the 92nd minute. The commentator says it's up for grabs now as Mickey Thomas is through on goal. I still get goosebumps. The film Fever Pitch, which is actually a pretty famous movie in this genre, culminates in this moment, priceless. Watching at home in England with my brother, a Liverpool fan, and he immediately went to the pub to drown his sorrows. I wasn't quite old enough to drink legally. Stuart, that's an awesome one. Unfortunately, I didn't start following the British soccer until about 2002, so I remember nothing about this.
Agreed.
Unfortunately, the next one I do, Michael from Maryland, he gives two of them. Maryland Duke game at Coalfield.
I know where I was.
When Maryland blew a 10-point lead with 50 seconds left in the game, snuck into the student section. I promise I did not hit Boozer's mom with the water bottle. So before we go next, we'll stop.
No, but you did watch Jay Williams raining threes.
It was, I remember watching that at my apartment, and then I was meeting my friend Will, who's one of the most knowledgeable sports people ever, after the game, another Maryland grad. We went to the Montgomery Grill and sat there for 2 hours and didn't say a word.
I walked into my roommate Don Conger's room with 5 minutes left in the game. We were going to go see, what was the movie? We were going to go see The Mummy 2, and we said,
you were going to pay to see The Mummy 2?
I was. You're going to pay. Okay. Well, this is Syracuse prices. Remember, everything's a little less. So we're going to pay to go see The Mummy 2. We were debating. And then in the last minute, we said, nah, we'll just watch the rest of the game. And we looked at each other when the game was over, and we go, ha-ha, Maryland fans.
And, of course, what I also remember so well about that was the next day was the Ravens-Giants Super Bowl.
Yep.
I walked in on Monday morning to my office, and my boss took one look at me and goes, what are you even doing here? He goes, go home. I said, seriously? He goes, no. He goes, no. That's why my boss was a douche. But he said, I can't, you must be in a mess. I go, yeah, it's not great. On better news, the first one was should be when Maryland won the NCAA championship the next year in Atlanta. But for some reason, he doesn't remember any of the game. Michael from Maryland is one of the all-time. He had a tolerance legendary even for the University of Maryland, so I can only imagine what happened there. I watched with 10 of my fraternity brothers and 8 of their wives or girlfriends at that point. We had the bar to ourselves. We were all going crazy. And then I came home to a phone call from my ex-girlfriend who I hadn't talked to in 3 months, which pretty much ruined my night. So
That was one of the few national championships I did not watch.
Fair enough.
I had no reason to watch it. I was out of my pools, and quite frankly, it was a bad game.
It was a terrible game. I was yelling at them to play better until my close friend actually said to me, "Go, Seth, they're up 12 with 2 minutes to go. You can stop yelling."
Right.
Okay. That's your point. Let's go with what do you got? What do you have on your side?
Well, I have a couple of people. I have Tom, who said the 1986 World Series, Game 6, obviously. Now, I know my brother would say, I remember all 4 Stanley Cup championships. And
he's younger than you.
Because
he's younger than you.
No, my older brother.
Okay.
But he would be full of crap because he doesn't remember any of them. So, Mitch, if you're listening, you may have been at one, but you don't remember it. That's all I had. I didn't have a whole lot of time to go through it. I do have a couple of my own, which I'd like to explain. Number one is I certainly remember where I was when and more of mine are not games, but more events. Because I think sometimes you get so caught up in the game that you forget sometimes that there are life events that go along with these games. And the first one I remember is I remember where I was when the O.J. trial, when the O.J. verdict came down, and when the O.J. chase went on. Both semi-related, well, we were actually getting ready for our pre-party for the prom. So our prom was the same night as Game 6 of the Knicks and the O.J. trial and the O.J. chase. So I exactly know where I was, and I know you do as well.
Yeah, but I think your timing is off. The O.J. chase wasn't Game 6. The O.J. chase was Game
5?
2 or Game 3. Because
you
it was
be
the day
right.
I came home.
You may be right. You may be right.
I was
because I watched Game 6. Forget that.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
It was
game
a day I came
three.
Home from Maryland orientation and early so I could get home from my sister. The sister was going to her 8th grade dance or whatever it was, so I wanted to be home for it or when she left. So I ended up watching the first half I was watching the Knicks-Houston Game 3 on my basement couch and fell asleep and missed the entire thing.
And you missed the chase.
I missed the chase. And I woke up the next morning in my basement, and my dad's like, what did you think? I said, I fell asleep during the game. He goes, what do you mean the game? I go, what are you talking about? He goes, look at the front page. I go, what do you mean they're chasing OJ with a truck? What the hell are they talking about?
So another one that I had was I remember exactly where I was when Magic said he had AIDS or had the HIV virus. I was just, much as I am right now, I was preparing for a radio show in high school with my friend Jody Talk, and we were doing, for WKWZ 88.5 out of Syosset High School, we were doing our week in review. And we got this
Do they have more listeners than we do?
They might. They very well might. But they definitely did at that time because I was getting interviews from all sorts of baseball teams. We may have to work on that too. But the fact of the matter is, I got a call from my mother. I called her and I said, Mom, I want to come home. And she's like, why? And I said, because I need to be in front of the TV. We're going to run a repeat of the show. And she's like, is it that important? I said, yeah, Magic Johnson is going to declare something in about 10 minutes, and I need to be home. She goes, what is he going to declare? And I said, the thought around the radio station is he either has cancer or AIDS. And my mom was like, okay, I'll come and get you now.
I was actually, and this shows what my mindset was when I was a 14-year-old kid. I got home, I guess, from junior high, and I think it was junior high, maybe it was 8th grade or 9th grade, I forget which.
Middle school.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, it was high school.
Then it was freshman year of high school.
A high school radio station.
Then it was freshman year of high school, and I saw it, and I was doing I actually had drafted Magic Johnson with my first pick in my fantasy basketball draft.
Yeah, that was
and
a
I promptly called the late
you
Josh Stein.
It's great.
What'd you say?
Did you make a trade?
I was about to say, I promptly called the late Josh Stein, who was an old friend of mine who tragically died several years back, and traded him for Clyde Drexler.
Oh.
And he eagerly accepted until 20 minutes later when he called me and threw out a bunch of expletives, which I cannot mention over the air. So that was my where I was for Magic.
Okay, and the last one that I vividly recall, I mean, the 86 World Series, obviously, but the last one that I vividly recall was when Larry Bird retired, because to me, that was the end of an era, because Magic and Bird, and I remember when that happened, and I was at day camp. I mean, I had heard it over the radio that he had been expected to retire, Bird, but you never really thought that he was going to, and when you're growing up with Magic and Bird, and that was what you tuned into. I mean, I never tuned into a Knicks game in the early 80s, even though they were my team. If I tuned in, because basketball really wasn't on TV all that much. We didn't have TNT. We didn't have TBS. It wasn't an NBA game every day. It was Sunday nights, sometimes on actual replay, you watch the Lakers versus Celtics. And it was Bird versus Magic, and there were video games, Bird versus Magic, Lakers versus Celtics. So when he retired, it was a big deal.
All right, I'll give you three or four of mine as well. One was first I'm going to start off actually with still the most amazing event I've ever, probably the most amazing sporting thing I've ever seen was the Jason Lezak relay in the 2010 Olympics. Every once in a while, my old apartment on 80th and 3rd, you could hear yelling around the block. And this was during one of Phelps' runs for the 8 gold medals where they were down, and this guy came from nowhere to beat the French, who were the overwhelming favorites. And you could just hear holy bleep around the entire Upper East. That was one. Another was actually when I was traveling through Europe, in 98, watching the England-Argentina quarterfinals with two British guys from Switzerland, we were in Switzerland, and David Beckham got a red card for kicking a guy or stomping on a guy, whatever you want to call it. I've never heard someone curse somebody so much in my life. Let's see what else we got. The David Tyree catch, I was with... I was at a party
watching half Giants, half Patriots fans, it was pretty, you know, it was what it was. I'm trying to think of the other, my favorite, I guess my favorite of all of them, though, was the when Maryland went to the Final Four for the first time. As most of you who know, I am a diehard Maryland fan, and to me, the greatest Maryland accomplishment, sports accomplishment of my lifetime is not the national championship. It was actually winning, going to the Final Four the year before, because they were 12-10 and were looking at an NIT, and they beat the number one team in the country in Stanford, destroyed them. So watching with my friend Anthony Emanuelo up in Hoboken, I was with my girlfriend, he was with his. And when about 5 minutes ago, this tough little Italian dude, we were both looking at each other like tears in our eyes, and the girlfriend just looked at us and go, "What a bunch of bleats." We look at each other, yeah, what can you do? I guess
I did forget Syracuse's Final Four. I mean the championship, I thought the championships actually go unsaid. But
okay.
Yeah, I was there. And crying.
The other one or two I probably should mention, and this was actually a pretty crazy event, and I'm hoping, I was hoping Ryan the Rabbi was actually going to call in, because he seemed pretty enthused about it. That was going to be our special guest. We haven't had him on for a while. But the 2001 World Series, I was starting grad school at George Washington, and I had a friend of mine who is by far the smartest human being I've ever met. I was introducing him to baseball. He was from India. He knew cricket. He'd never seen a World Series. So we walked into a bar called the Third Edition, in the top of the ninth inning. And then in the bottom of the ninth, Jeter hit the home run to win it. And then the next day we went back and Tino hit the home run, and then Brocious hit the home run to win it. And the bar went absolutely, I mean, this was a D.C. bar. This was not a New York bar. And the place just absolutely exploded. So those to me are the most indelible memories that I've had.
Well, the funny thing is, I remember where I was when Luis Gonzalez hit his hit off of Mariano Rivera. Unfortunately, I wasn't watching it. I had flipped over to the Jets and Saints game, and Kyle Curley had just thrown his helmet, and everything was going nuts in the Saints game. And I was, this was before picture-in-picture, going back and forth in that same series. And I turned back, and Luis Gonzalez was holding up a world championship trophy. I was like, uh-oh, I must have missed something pretty important since the game's over. And then I was inundated with calls.
I will actually read quickly. I don't know Ryan the Rabbi's, his notes on, his comments. And we'll go with that. We'll just see what we remember from here. The Aaron Boone home run.
Oh, yeah.
I woke my parents up. I just got home from class at 1 o'clock in the morning. I was watching at the bar at the Port Authority. Caught a bus and woke them up at 1 in the morning with that. You remember that one or no?
I had flown back with my younger brother Jay from Las Vegas. And that night, I actually had to drive to Syracuse, which is a 5-hour drive from New York, a 4.5-hour drive from New York. And I started driving at 11 o'clock in the morning. At 11 o'clock at night. So that game and John Sterling took me all the way to the Boone home run. And not only was I wasn't happy about the Boone home run, and the reasoning, not because I'm not a Yankee fan, but that was keeping me awake. The game was, this was keeping me awake, so I had to keep driving, and I still had another 75 miles to go. That was exhausting. So I totally remember that.
Okay, let's see what else he's got. The Jeter Brocious back-to-back home runs off of Kim we just discussed. The Dream Team games. I don't really remember the Dream Team games.
Any of them.
This is funny. The Final Four Chris Webber timeout.
I know where I was.
Please.
You and I have discussed this.
I believe you
were slightly inebriated, weren't you?
Yes, this was the first night I ever got drunk. Happened to be the night of the Final Four of the Chris Webber timeout game. So I came home from Passover and promptly passed out.
And I was watching it at Passover, and I ran out and said, Chris Webber may be the stupidest blankety bleep I've ever seen because you just cost me my pool.
So let's see what else he's got. Reggie Miller, 8 seconds, 8 points in 18 seconds. which we've already discussed.
I prefer not to remember that.
All right, well, we actually got about 5 minutes to go. So you want to start the closing?
Sure. I read something earlier this week, and it really touched a little bit home. First of all, thanks to everybody that responds to our question of the week, because it is fantastic going through these memories. To our friends that are new listeners like Jeff Seizma, please call, write, whatever you want, answer the question of the week. We love hearing from everybody. So I read this on MSN, and sometimes sports are one thing, but sometimes life really takes a backseat. Sports should really take a backseat to life. A man named Aaron Collins died on July 7th, and one of his last wishes was to give a tip, and I mean like a tip to a waitress or a pizzeria or somebody, a $500 tip to an unknowing waitress. Just go in, and he wanted his family, in his notes he said, I would like to give a tip, $500. So there's a video, and I suggest that anybody that would like to watch this really look it up. It's on MSN, it's on Yahoo, it's on Fox News, of the family that went in and gave a $500 tip to the waitress, and the waitress was so surprised. They have developed a website to solicit funds, and as long as they keep getting funds, they will continue giving out $500 tips to unknowing waitresses and waiters. And I think it is a fantastic cause. In fact, it moved me so much that I donated that right after reading it. So I suggest you, so far, according to the website, $10,000 has been raised. According to Fox News, according to their website, $35,000 has been raised. That's enough $500 tips for one every day. That's absolutely incredible for a year. That is absolutely incredible. And you know what? Sometimes out of death comes absolute life. So I think that that's a great story, and I think that everybody should look and see what they can do for somebody in need. Great times. Really had a good time with the show. As usual, this is the highlight of my week because my work week has sucked. So this is for me. Thanks for everybody tuning in, and Seth, take it away.
My story, as usual, is not quite as exciting as – it's not quite as, I guess, heartwarming as Mr. Palmer's. I have the unfortunate – just came across this literally 10 minutes ago. TLC is apparently doing a reality show on Pete Rose. I don't even know where to begin with this. I haven't cared about
Pete Rose. You can see him in Vegas. He sits there every day.
Apparently, Pete Rose is engaged to a 30-year-old Playboy model. And this show is going to be... Now, To be fair, I am as anti... Except for The Amazing Race, which I haven't watched in years, I'm about as anti-reality TV as anyone I know. And the idea of watching Pete Rose beg, plead, do whatever he does to make a dollar and eventually get back into the Hall of Fame, I wonder if his fiance actually realizes he's not worth anything at this point. Because I can't imagine... The guy does not exactly exude sexiness. And... He's not, you know...
He's confidence.
You know, the camera will follow them through events such as Rose taking the family to visit the Hall of Fame. Oh, good God. Or to Kim getting a breast reduction. But yet he says it's not going to be classless like it seems a lot of reality shows are. They're not really reality, but our show is going to be funny and entertaining and real. You know, this is why... I don't even know where to start. Sometimes just the material just writes itself. Pete,
agreed.
Well, we got
nobody cares.
Us. Let me ask you this as a last thing. Jeremy Lin going to be a Nick in 5 hours?
No.
Okay. I will say that Jimmy Dolan will come up with the money. I'm going to go against you.
Well, if we ever come up with a bet, we'll actually do it. So next week, I think we'll do a little bit of Olympics because the Olympics should be starting next. We'll be starting actually. The soccer starts on Wednesday. We'll do a little bit of a preview there. We'll do our question of the week. I think should probably be Olympic related. Sean is. I'm going to post my 8 teams I don't want. Sean is going to post what team I'm supposed to root for now, and that'll be on Seth and Sports. That'll be both on my Facebook and Seth and Sean's Sports Facebook. for Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, SethandSean.com. Well, not .com, Seth and Sean Sports Radio. Enjoy. Have a good week. Bye.
Yeah.